There are a lot of reasons for that, but I think it's obvious that what was going to happen with Giancarlo Stanton and Shohei Ohtani really made a lot of teams and executives nervous about solidifying what their winter plans were going to be.
Well, let's start with the Ohtani deal. First of all, do you think it's a good landing spot for him? And if so, why?
Tough to say. I mean, not a lot of people quite understand Ohtani's desires or understand his motives. And I think that's because those desires and motives are probably very different from most players in his situation. I mean, it's the most unique free agent case that I think anyone's ever seen. For one, it shouldn't have happened because of the way that the collective bargaining agreement was restructured last year, making all international signees amateurs before the age of 25, which means that Ohtani, if he were to come over now, was going to leave hundreds of millions of dollars on the table by only signing a minor league deal. And that's, of course, what happened. But it doesn't seem like he cares a lot about money, at least not in the traditional sense. If he did, he would have waited 2 years until he turned 25 to come over. And then when he sent out a questionnaire to all 30 teams, the questions on it, I think, maybe turned people's heads a little bit. It seemed he was much more interested in the structure of a team's player development setup, their conditioning and their health and medical facilities, the particularities of the market size. Seemed very clear that he didn't have a whole lot of interest in playing anywhere but the West Coast and probably out of the media market hotbeds of Boston and New York. That's why the Yankees were rejected in the first round. I'm very intrigued by the fact that he ended up with the Angels. It could be to his benefit in terms of a competitive standpoint, because obviously Mike Trout is there, is the best player in baseball. And the team, even before they got Ohtani, was maybe a fringe wildcard contender. The team isn't actually that bad. The farm system is in rough shape. The starting rotation's in rough shape. But Trout and role players like Cole Calhoun and Angelson Simmons, and as well as Martin Maldonado's coming off of a really good year. There may be something that could suggest this team can chase a wildcard berth. And now with Ohtani there, it almost seems like a guarantee. So I think for Ohtani, the fact that he's, you know, on the West Coast, it's not as strenuous a plane ride back to Japan. Obviously, the greater Los Angeles area has a massive Japanese immigrant and Japanese-American population, so there's tons of endorsement opportunity there. And I think that we don't know this yet, but Billy Epler, the general manager of the Angels, might have really put together the best kind of presentation as to how they would want to use him as a pitcher and a hitter, because every team has had to get creative with that. Since Ohtani had all the leverage here and this is the team that he picked, it's hard to say that he made a bad choice.
All right, let's talk about the Stanton deal, because, Evan, you know, from a Red Sox perspective, already comparisons are being made to Kevin McHale, who, when he was GM of the Timberwolves, sent a bunch of talent, including Kevin Garnett, back to his old team. Is it as simple as that with Derek Jeter, or was this the best deal he could get?
Oh, it's the best deal that he could get. I mean, yeah, I've seen a lot of that, too, that somehow Jeter is conspiring to help his old team be better, or this, that, and the other, and that's just preposterous. The Marlins backed themselves into a corner. They made their intentions known very, very early, and that intention being that all they were interested in was getting rid of payroll. This new ownership inherited a busted franchise thanks to the chicanery that Jeffrey Loria got into over the course of 15 years. And the new ownership, led by a venture capitalist named Bruce Sherman, yes, they are being stuck with a $400 million debt burden that they're going to have to start paying down. But at the same time, they could have been a lot smarter about how they moved Stanton's contract, maybe been a little bit cagier about their motivations and their interests, and could have gotten a better prospect package. Instead, they just settled for dumping the salary and a couple of A-ball prospects from the Yankees. And it's also a matter of Jeter didn't have any power, even if Stanton, you know, was willing to waive his no-trade clause for anybody. The fact that the no-trade clause was there in the first place meant that Stanton was in the driver's seat. All of this got held up because Stanton didn't want to play for the Cardinals or the Giants, and that's completely within his rights to feel that way, and the Dodgers didn't come up with a package that the Marlins were interested in. So once that happens, you have to take what you can get, and the Yankees, I think, smell blood in the water. Brian Cashman is maybe the best general manager in baseball at being able to do that, and the Yankees are coming out on top of this deal in every way that you can imagine. And I think that the Red Sox, you know, I've talked about this on the show before, and I've written about it too. The Red Sox, for all the value that they have gotten out of players like Chris Sale and Craig Kimbrell, they emptied their farm system to make those trades. And thanks to the David Price deal and a couple of other free agent signings, as well as the Pomerantz trade, they don't have any payroll flexibility. They were never going to be in the Stanton sweepstakes. They just don't have the ability to go after a player like that at this point. And it's an open question as to whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing, but they just don't have the resources to make it happen. And I think that Derek Jeter had to take the best deal that was available to him, and that was the Yankees.
We're talking with Evan Davis here on Downtown. Now, I will say Dave Dombrowski has been relatively proactive since he took the Red Sox job, jumping on Sale early last year and some other moves, but now he's in a situation where he has to react to what the Yankees did. Will we see him make a big move for either a free agent like a J.D. Martinez or maybe a guy like an Eric Hosmer, or does he go in a different route to get that power bat that they need?
I think Hosmer and Martinez have been the two primary targets of his office. I think that's been pretty well established since the beginning of the offseason. I think Hosmer is a bit of a landmine, and just because while he did have his best offseason of his career last year, he is not known for actually being all that good. I mean, for a guy with such a sterling reputation, he's a pretty poor defender at first base. He really is a league average bat. He's not an elite bat. He hits the ball really hard, but he hits it into the ground. And he doesn't seem to be all that willing or interested in revamping his swing to try and hit more air balls. If he did that, then all of a sudden he'd add a lot of power to his game and be a valuable player. When it comes to Martinez, I think that's the absolute best fit. The Red Sox, you know, I think that's the kind of guy where you'd be willing to go past the luxury tax threshold to get, because he has been one of the four or five best hitters in the game over the last 4 years. You know, they can put him in at DH and forego his defensive liabilities and be all right. It sounds like what Dombrowski wants to do, and I'm perplexed by this, is to sign Martinez and then trade Jackie Bradley Jr. for a first baseman or for another piece. And I'm not really sure what the center field market is for a guy like Bradley. Heard about that a week or two ago, and it seems like Bradley, the team that needs Bradley the most is the Red Sox. Bradley is one of the best defensive center fielders in baseball, and he has enough pop in his bat to carry himself at the position. And he's young enough that it doesn't seem to be, it's certainly not a payroll dump. If you move him, I think it creates more problems than it solves. And so if I were Dombrowski, I would push in really hard on Martinez, take the hit with the luxury tax, and you have that extra piece of power, and then figure out first base another way. But you got to keep Bradley, in my opinion.
You mentioned Bradley possibly being available. You also wrote about the fact that the Marlins have a couple other outfielders that might be an attractive piece for someone else.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe if Dombrowski's really interested in moving Bradley to get a first baseman, you know, he could engage the Marlins on getting either Christian Yelich or Marcellus. I think, you know, the Marlins are screwing themselves again. If you make both of these guys available, you're oversaturating the market not only with outfielders but with your own players, and that's going to drive their price down. You're not really going to get a massive amount of salary relief from losing them. And even if you don't care about that and you're just trying to get however many millions off your books, you have to just decide that you're keeping one or the other in order to try and maximize the prospect value for the one that you do move. I'm not sure which way that they're going to go. If I were a Marlins fan, or if I were really in support of them not completely cratering, and I think all of baseball should be in support of that, I would hope that they just choose one or the other and be really, really savvy about what kind of package they will listen to a team on. Because if the Marlins come out of this with a shrunken payroll and they still have no farm system, I mean, you might as well just contract the franchise at this point, because every ownership group over the last, barring John Henry for the few years that he owned the team, every owner that has owned this team has ruined it. And I think that there's only so much that the league can take if this continues to go on.
So now that we have the Ohtani deal, the trade of Stanton, do you think we'll see some action this week at the winter meetings? Will there be some free agent signings of note, and will teams be more willing to trade?
I think so. I mean, obviously, the most business is always done during this week, and the fact that everything's been so backlogged for a month, I think we're about to see an onslaught of free agent signings and trades done. I mean, we've already seen Brandon Morrow sign with the Cubs. The Cubs needed some bullpen help since they're about to lose Wade Davis. That deal was done yesterday. We're hearing a ton more chatter. Bizarrely enough, the Padres have decided that they might want to be buyers. They're kicking the tires on Eric Hosmer and Carlos Santana. I don't really know why. The team is pretty far away from contention, and they have a farm system, but most of the guys are several years away from the majors, so it make more sense for them to continue stockpiling assets rather than make any type of win-now push, especially since that failed for them 3 years ago when A.J. Preller took over the team. That being said, you know, the Giants need outfield help. I think the Dodgers want to bolster their bullpen a little bit. The Astros apparently are looking for a frontline starter to go along with Dallas Keuchel and Justin Verlander. There's going to be a ton of action, and I think that there might be a greater flurry of action just because no one was willing to do anything throughout the month of November until Ohtani and Stanton were settled.
All right, Evan, before we let you go, we got to shift away from baseball for a moment. I noticed that the revamp of Twin Peaks was listed by a French organization as the best movie of the year. Well, whether you call it a movie or a TV series, we talked with you about it early on. Were you satisfied overall with this new run from David Lynch?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is one of the most fascinating things that anyone has had the pleasure to see, you know, on the big screen or the small screen in a really long time. I think that the show has been more daring from a narrative and aesthetic standpoint than just about anything on television right now, and that's mainly due to the fact that David Lynch was allowed to just be David Lynch and do exactly what he wanted, and could do it over the course of 18 hours rather than just two. I wrote a piece for Decider.com about watching the whole thing as an 18-hour movie, which is the way that Lynch intended it to be seen. And just the sheer complexity of his narrative and aesthetic strategies really come into focus when you have the ability to just binge it all in one go like that. I think people are going to be unpacking this thing for a really long time. A lot of really annoying graduate student papers will be written about it. As Lord knows, if I were still in graduate school, I would probably be one of those guys. But this is as rich and as complex and as fascinating a work of moving image art as I have seen in the last several years. And it's always a pleasure to get the whole movie or TV debate going. I know that, you know, the official corporate account of Wendy's was making some of their picks for their favorite movies online, which was really funny. And somebody did ask them if they thought Twin Peaks was a movie or a TV show. And they responded, well, you know, it's a porous boundary. Is something like that, just because it's on a television network, really a TV show, just in the way that, you know, the movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, given the fact that they're all connected in one way or another and serialized, are they really traditional, unitary pieces of art, the way we think about movies? It's an open debate, and I love talking about it. So the Blu-ray of Twin Peaks is now available, and I encourage everybody to go buy it, because it also looks probably the best of any show that came out this year. So it's been a lot of fun to watch and think about it and write about it.
Good stuff, as always. Evan Davis, love talking with you on the show. Thanks for making time for us this afternoon, and enjoy watching those winter meetings develop.
Thanks a lot, Rich.
Evan Davis contributes to Hardball Times, FanRag Sports, many other publications, and he's the host of the In Play podcast.